excitement only to make fun of them. It is as if desires surrogate itself simultaneously turned against it. The realistic behavior of the oppressed triumphs over his dream of happiness while being itself incorporated into the latter. And as if to confirm the superficiality and treachery of every form of ecstasy, the feet are unable to fulfill what the ear pretends. The same chitterbugs who behave as if they were electrified by syncopation dance almost exclusively the good rhythmic parts. The weak flesh punishes the lies of the willing spirit. The gestural ecstasy of the infantile listener misfires in the face of the ecstatic gesture. The opposite type appears to be the eager person who leaves the factory and occupies himself with music in the quiet of his bedroom. He is shy and inhibited, perhaps no luck with girls, and wants in any case to preserve his own special sphere. Page 293. He seeks this as a radio ham. At 20, he is still at the stage of a Boy Scout working on complicated knots just to please his parents. This type is held in high esteem in radio matters. He patiently builds sets whose most important parts he must buy ready-made and scans the air for shortwave secrets, though there are none. As a reader of Indian stories and travel books, he once discovered unknown lands and cleared his path through the forest primeval. As radio ham, he becomes the discoverer of just those industrial products which are interested in being discovered by him. He brings nothing home which could not be delivered to his house. The adventurers of pseudo-activity have already organized themselves on a large scale. The radio amateurs have printed verification cards, sent them by the shortwave stations they have discovered, and hold contests in which the winner is the one who can produce the most such cards. All this is carefully fostered from above. Of all fetishistic listeners, the radio ham is perhaps the most complete. It is irrelevant to him that he hears or even how he hears. He is only interested in the fact that he hears and succeeds in inserting himself with his private equipment into the public mechanism without exerting even the slightest influence on it. With the same attitude, countless radio listeners play with the feedback or the sound dial without themselves becoming hams. Others are more expert or at least more aggressive. These smart chaps can be found everywhere and are able to do everything themselves. The advanced student who in every gathering is ready to play jazz with machine-like precision for dancing and entertainment. The gas station attendant who hums his syncopation ingeniously while filling up the tank. The listening expert who can identify every band and immerses himself in the history of jazz as if it were holy writ. He is nearest to the sportsman, if not to the football player himself, then to the swaggering fellow who dominates the stands. He shines by capacity for rough improvisation, even if he must practice the piano for hours in secret in order to bring the refractory rhythms together. He pictures himself as the individualist who whistles at the world, but what he whistles is its melody, and his tricks are less inventions of the moment then stored up experiences from acquaintances with sought-after technical things. His improvisations are always gestures of nimble subordination to what the instrument demands of him. The chauffeur is the model for the listening type of the clever fellow. His agreement with everything dominant goes so far that he no longer produces any resistance, but of his own accord always does what he asks of him for the sake of the responsible functionary. Page 294. He lies to himself about the completeness of his subordination to the rule of the reified mechanism. Thus, the sovereign routine of the chess amateur is nothing but the passive capacity for adaption to models from which to avoid straying. He is the real jazz subject. His improvisation comes from the pattern, and he navigates the pattern, cigarette in mouth, as nonchalantly as if he had invented it himself. Regressive listeners have key points in common with the man who must kill time because he has nothing else on which to vent his aggression, and with the casual laborer. To make oneself a chess expert or hang over the radio at all, one must have much free time and little freedom. The dexterity which comes to term with the syncopation as well as with the basic rhythm is that of the auto mechanic who can also repair the loudspeaker and the electric light. The new listener resembles the mechanism who are simultaneously specialized and capable of applying their special skills to unexpected places outside their skilled trades. But this despecialization only seems to help them out of the system. The more easily they meet the demands of the day, the more rigidly they are subordinated to that system. The research finding that among radio listeners, the friends of light music reveal themselves to be depoliticized is not accidental. The possibility of individual shelter and of a security, which is, as always, questionable, obstructs the view of a change in the situation in which one seeks shelter. Superficial experience contradicts this. The younger generation, the concept itself is merely an ideological catch-all, seems to be in conflict with its elders, and their push culture precisely through the new way of listening. In America, it is just the so-called liberals and progressives whom one finds among the advocates of light popular music, most of whom want to classify their activity as democratic. But if regressive hearing is progressive as opposed to the individualistic sort, it is only in the dialectical sense that it is better fitted to the advancing brutality than the latter. All possible mold had been rubbed off the baseness, and it is legitimate to criticize the aesthetic residue of an individuality that was long since wrested from individuals. But this criticism comes with little force from the sphere of popular music, since it is just this sphere that mummifies the vulgarized and decaying remnants of romantic individualism. Its innovations are inseparable, coupled with these remnants. Machokism in hearing is not only defined by self-surrender and pseudo-pleasure through identification with power. Underlying it is the knowledge that the security of shelter under the ruling conditions is a provisional one, that it is only a respite, and that eventually everything must collapse. Page 295. Even in self-surrender, one is not good in its own eyes. In his enjoyment, one feels that he is simultaneously betraying the possible and being betrayed by the existent. Regressive listening is always ready to degenerate into rage. If one knows that he is basically marking time, the rage is directed primarily against everything which could disavow the modernity of being vivid and up to date and reveal how little has in fact changed. From photographs and movies, one knows the effect produced by the modern grown old, an effect originally used by the surrealists to shock and subsequently degraded to the cheap amusement of those who fetishism fastens on the abstract present. For the regressive listener, this effect is fantastically foreshortened. They would like to ridicule and destroy what yesterday they were intoxicated with, as in retrospect to revenge themselves for the fact that the ecstasy was not actually such. This effect has been given a name of its own and repeatedly been propagated in press and radio. But we should not think of the rhythmically simpler, light music of the pre-jazz era and its relics as corny. Rather, the term applies to all those syncopated pieces which do not conform to the approved rhythmic formula of the present moment. A jazz expert can shake with laughter when he hears a piece which in good rhythm follows a 16th note with a punctuated eighth. Also, this rhythm is more aggressive and in no way more provincial in character than the syncopated connection and reunification of all counter-stress practiced later. The regressive listener are in fact destructive. The old-timers' insult has its ironic justification. Ironic because the destructive tendencies of the regressive listener are in truth directed against the same thing that the old-fashioned hate, against disobedience as such, unless it comes under the tolerated spontaneity of collective excesses. The seeming opposition of the generations is nowhere more transparent than in rage. The bigots who complain to the radio stations in pathetic, sadistic letters of the chasing up of holy things and the youth who delight in such exhibitions are of one mind. It requires only the proper situation to bring them together in a united front. This furnishes a criticism of the new possibilities in regressive listening. One might be tempted to rescue it if it were something in which the erratic characteristics of the work of art, its illusory elements, gave way to the playful ones. However, it may be with films, today's mass music shows little of such progress in disenchantment. Nothing survives in it more steadfastly than the illusion. Nothing is more illusory than its reality. The infantile play has scarcely more than the name in common with the productivity of children. Page 296. Otherwise, bourgeois sport would not want to differentiate itself so strictly from play. Its bestial seriousness consists in the fact that instead of remaining faithful to the dream of freedom by getting away from purposeness, the treatment of play as a duty puts it among useful purposes and thereby wipes out the trace of freedom in it. This is particularly valid for contemporary mass music. It is only play as a repetition of prescribed models and the playful release from responsibility, which is thereby achieved, does not reduce at all the time devoted to duty, except by transferring the responsibility to the models, the following of which one makes into a duty for himself. In this lies the inherent pretense of the dominant music sport. It is illusory to promote the technical, rational moments of contemporary mass music, or the special capacities of the regressive listeners, which may correspond to these moments at the expense of a decayed magic, which nevertheless prescribed the rules for the bare functioning itself. It would also be illusory because the technical innovations of mass music really don't exist. This goes without saying for harmonic and melodic construction. The real coloristic accomplishment of modern dance music, the approach of the different colors to one another to the extent that one instrument replaces another without a break or one instrument can disguise itself as another, is as familiar to Wagnerian and post-Wagnerian orchestral technique